Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock for the next, let's just say 2 hours. We're going to talk about car problems, car questions, what kind of oil. I'm told I need this. Is it really true about this? Anything you need, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you can give us a call, and Gil's going to answer the phone. Be nice to him, because he's the one that pushes all the buttons. And sometimes, if you're not nice, he pushes the wrong button, and you go out in Never Never Land. Although, it's not happened in the last 400 shows. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we'll talk about cars. I don't have anything to sell you. I don't have anything to give you, except advice. I'm not going to send you any place that you, soliciting to you, but I am going to tell you about some shops that I personally recommend. And the reason why I do that is because these guys are good. And it goes without saying that no one shop can cover all the valley. So I have strategically placed shops all around. I didn't strategically place them. I've known these guys for years and years and years. I know who's honest, who's dependable, who's going to be in business day after tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. I know how many guys out there pay their parts bills. We all do the same business for the same kind of parts companies, all that kind of stuff. So, for instance, here's a good example. Action Auto's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since before 1983. He's been in business a very long time. He's a good guy. He knows right from wrong. He's an ASE certified technician along with many of his technicians. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto's on the northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley, and Tom runs a good shop there. I'm sure you're like me. You're getting really tired of the robocalls about car warranties. I am too. And I have determined, because there's probably 5 or 6 phone lines that are in my world, and you can just look at the calls, and here's what I know for sure. When the call comes in, and it's one of these car warranty ones, my answering machine will pick it up, and I've got it set for like maybe 1001, 1002, 1003, and then I dump you. Well, in that period of time, it takes a while for the operator to tell somebody there's an open line on this big phone bank thing. So then we'll hang up on them. But I'm going to tell you, and I've been keeping count of this, 480 and 602, I don't care what the prefix is, the middle numbers in Arizona are going to be 210. So I see 480-210, and I see 602-210. I see 623-210. But what's really amazing is all the middle letters are the 210. And Renee and I counted last night, there was 27 out of 31 calls on our machines in a couple of places that we have phones that have the 210. And when the answering machine says hello, nobody talks because there's this delay as they pass that open line to somebody. So now we're just blocking everybody with a 210. I'm sorry if anybody out there has a 210, call me and tell me, 602-508-0960. But it's amazing. Now, we're also finding out it's 218, but we're doing more further study on that. But the robocalls drive me crazy. Let's talk warranties, though, real quick. Here's the issue with our industry right now, and it has a lot to do with warranties, and it has a lot to do with repairs and normal maintenance. First of all, we used to get, now I'm using visual language for you, okay? This is radio, you can't see me wave my hands and stuff like that. The visual language is way back in the days, up until actually the mid-80s, mid-80s, maybe 90s. We used to see you every 3,000 miles, or sooner if your husband wants to change the oil to make sure the car loves him forever. Nevertheless, 3,000 miles you would come in, and some of us would rotate your tires every time, some would do it every other time, some would do it every 3 times. Our job was to look your car over and look at all the fluids, the belts, the hoses, the tires, the brakes, and for any potential leak or problem. Any clunking noise, any bushings that the rubbers come loose on, any oil leaking out of the back of the differential cover, all that kind of stuff. So it was a visual inspection of your car, fluids, hoses, belts, tires, all that stuff. The problem with that is, back then, is that we all used a different maintenance schedule, which typically the maintenance schedule would benefit us, not you. So very few times does a customer say, wait a minute, you want to rotate my tires every oil change, but really in my manual it says do it every 7 to 9,000 miles. So I should be rotating my tires every third oil change. That conversation's never happened to me, I don't think, ever. But the idea is that's what used to be it. And obviously the oil changes back then, you'd see them at $9.95 all the way up to $30 to $35. So today, let's move forward to today. We see your car every, if you actually follow the owner's manual on your newer model car, and I'll say everything from 2010 up, you can go back further than that if you want. You can go to 2000, go north. But from 2000 to 10, we really saw a synthetic oil come to life. And there's so many cars out there with synthetic oil in it. That oil is designed and is capable to run somewhere between 10 and 15,000 miles between oil changes. A lot of folks don't want to go that far because it leaves them out of a comfort zone. There's even more people that don't want to go that far because they don't want to have to check their oil, because that's part of extending the 3,000 miles. Most cars came in at 3,000 miles a quart low. They were on the ad mark. The difference between the ad mark and the full mark is one quart. So they came in for an oil change, they're a quart low already at 3,000. The newer model cars do a much better job than that when we compare the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Much better job. So when it comes to maintenance schedules and oil change intervals, if you follow your manual, you're likely to see your shop one time a year. And I would prefer to see you in April, May, June. Let's get the stuff done at the beginning of the summer and before the travel season and before you go to California for your summer vacation. Let's get it done early. So if you see me every 10,000 miles, that's maybe once or twice a year. That's going to have a negative impact in the repair industry, because many of your stuff has extended that as well. So your tranny services and all your fluids, your belts and hoses, 80 to 100,000 miles. If you go past 100, you're kind of rolling the dice, and by 110, I don't want my kids going to Disneyland in your car. So those are the kinds of things that we're up against. So our industry is adapting. We're selling you all kinds of stuff you don't need. We sell you services and magic lotions and potions that we're going to put in your oil or in your engine or in your gas tank, or we're going to do all this kind of stuff to make your car love you and make it last forever. We're even going to put an oil that's supposed to have, according to your owner's manual, and I say yours, let's go mine. According to my owner's manual, I should change my oil every 10 to 12,000 miles and use a synthetic blend. I do, or a synthetic oil. I do. I use a synthetic oil. It has a longer oil change interval than the other two oils. Conventional is called Mother Earth oil. And then a semi-synthetic is a blend between Mother Earth and full-blood synthetic. It could be 50-50, it could be 70-30, it could be 80-20. No one knows. So when you look at the three oils, they have a defined difference in interval of service. Conventional, 3 to 5,000. The middle guy, 5 to 7,500. The synthetic, call it 8 grand to 15,000 miles. But your owner manual tells you, here's what's going on in our industry. We're selling you a premium oil change. We're billing you the $75 to $125 that would typically be a premium oil change. So you would assume that your door sticker would say that you could go somewhere between 7,500 and 10,000 miles between oil changes. Well, that's not true. We put 3,000 on your sticker. We're calling you back in, and you're not getting the benefit of the expensive oil we just put in your car. We need you to come back in. It's difficult. You have to do volume if you're going to make money in the auto repair industry, or you somehow have to generate sales. In addition to all of that, what's going on now is we're all, in my industry and the car industry in general, we're going to give you free oil changes for life. So you don't have to do that. Now here's where we talk out of both sides of our mouth. We want to see you twice a year. Wait a minute, what happened to every 3,000 miles? Yesterday it was every 3,000 miles and now twice a year. Well, if I drive 12,000 miles a year, that's 6 and 6. Well, we want to see you every other oil change, and then we're going to give you a free oil change, but it's going to give us a chance to chew on your wallet. See, it's a reoccurring sales opportunity. If I give you a free oil change, you come in, and I get to sell you a tire rotation, maybe brakes, maybe belts, maybe hoses, maybe a differential service, maybe a struts, maybe lower control arm bushings, maybe motor mounts, maybe a battery service, maybe an air conditioning service, your heater core is leaking, you need wiper blades. You see how that goes? So the free oil change virtually ensures that we're going to nibble on your wallet, if not just chew your wallet up when you come in for a free oil change, because you're basically, we don't have to spend any more marketing. We just give you a free oil change. Then you come in. But we're not going to put on your sticker that you can go 10 or 12,000 miles. So we're not going to look at your mileage and you got 30 and I'm going to call you back at 40. We're going to put 30 and 33. We're going to call you back in 3,000 miles. Now, we're putting an oil in that will cover 3,000 miles, but we're adding the word premium to it. I've been in this business since in high school in 1973. '68. I worked in a Shell station in Tempe. So I've been around a long time. I've worked for people that took advantage of their customers. I've seen people that were taken advantage of. But there's a heck of a lot of shops out there today that are not going to take advantage of you. They're interested in a very clean and honorable relationship. Here's what your car manual says. We'd like you to come in every 7,500 miles for an oil change. We're going to put the sticker, and it says, when you reach this miles, please call to make an appointment to bring your car in for an oil change. There's a lot of us out there, but there's a whole lot more out there that have their interests in front of your interests. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil, who's holding, and I'll get him on the other side of the break.
That was Tom.
Tom, stay right there. We'll be back right after this. Well, there are five lines into this radio show, and four of them are vacant right now. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Four lines open. We're going to go to Tom like we promised. Tom, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I go way back with you to KMOX in St. Louis. So.
Oh, man. Folks, let me just kind of tell everybody else. One of the best times of my life is I was at KMOX in St. Louis, which is a giant radio station. Now, KMOX hit, I had callers from Canada to the north, to Galveston, Texas to the south, from Denver, Colorado to Washington, D.C. And the difference in St. Louis is this, difference between Arizona and St. Louis. So, Tom, give me just a minute. In St. Louis, you hear people say, well, in Phoenix you hear, I took my car in and he was 17 cents over his estimate and I'm never going back again and I burned him on Yelp. In St. Louis you'd say, I've been dealing with Tommy and his father and his grandfather for 3,500 years. And while we've had our differences every now and then, we are still good friends and I would never use anybody else. How close am I, Tom?
Very, very, very close.
Yeah. I love that place. I love St. Louis. It was if you dared badmouth or say that shop shouldn't have said that, you paid heck. But anyway, I'm all yours. What's up?
Okay. I have a 2002 S10 pickup with 167,000 miles, V6.
Okay.
And the ABS light started staying on, I should say. And took it to a friend of mine, mechanic. Both of us been messing with cars for 50-plus years. And he got the thing to where the ABS light doesn't stay on. But now, when I apply the brakes, and we're down to like 6 miles per hour coming to a stop, there is a shutter in the pedal, and I can hear what is almost like a moan.
Mm-hmm.
And it does that 95% of the time at stop signs. And we cannot find a reason.
Okay. Your ABS is really not supposed to be active that low. What you're talking about is ABS activation. Okay? That's what's going on.
Right.
The computer is saying, I see all the tires rolling, but this one came to a stop. I lost sight of this tire, and so I'm going to start releasing the pressure, applying pressure, releasing pressure, applying pressure to the one that's acting up.
Okay, he had a $3,000 borrowed scanner that said all four wheels were rotating at the same speed.
What did he do?
What did he do? He was driving the truck.
So. No, I understand. But what did he do to make the light go off?
I hate to say this, but I wasn't there.
Okay.
Now, he checked every sensor, all the wires, you know, everything that he could, and I have faith in the guy, so,
okay.
You know, like you said, St. Louis, you got faith in people.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm gonna tell you that if I was your best buddy, this is what I would have done. First of all, it's important to understand how the scanner works, and it's important to understand how ABS works, so driving it to Circle K and back isn't gonna cut it. Because that's not normal driving, or hopping on the freeway and going, you know, 11 miles north and turning around and coming 11 miles south. That doesn't do it. You got to go behind bashes and you got to go circles, hard circles, soft circles, small circles, big circles, left circles, right circles. The ABS has to keep track of all of those wheels. It's looking at the steering. It's looking at the wheels. Almost always, I can actually get the signal drop when I'm doing that kind of stuff. But you have to understand that there is a certain gyration you got to take that car through. We had a lady come in, and we would clear the code, and she would be back in 2 or 3 days with the lights on again. So Eddie, one of my senior techs, said when she left the other day, she drove over the curb. And when wait a minute now, I'm going to put it in there, and I'm going to say the old guy was Tom. Okay, because I can hear you laughing, and I'm laughing with you. He says, when she throttled up right, the car jumped up, the tire spun, and then when it came down, it went, and she just went by. He says, I need to ask her if, to pay attention, we're going to clear the light, but when the car comes on, or when the light comes on, the ABS light comes on, are you turning right? Are you leaving a slow speed environment of a parking lot and then you're turning right and accelerating at 30, 40, 50 miles an hour? And lo and behold, that's exactly what it was. Is we just needed her to swing a little wider on right turns and keep that right rear tire out of the air. Because as soon as the tire goes up in the air, it's doing 20, and the rest of them are 7 or 8 or 9. Well, then ABS grabs a hold of that tire and says, slow down. So in his particular case, have him get his Whammo Zammo $3,000 scanner. And by the way, $3,000 is kind of cheap today. I think we've got a couple that are in the 30 range. But have him drive circles in your vehicle. And he can't do it himself. You can't drive and do this. You want to drive, and he'll tell you what to do. And he's watching the values on all the scanners. So it's not going to be good and bad. There's values there, number values. And so he tells you what to do, but he's got to keep his eye on the scanner. Other than that, sooner or later, it's going to pick up the same sensor 2 or 3 times. And then you can replace that particular speed sensor on that particular area of the car. I'm thinking your S10, though, because you have a 4.3-liter V6 on that S10, I'm thinking that probably only has 3 sensors. It's got 1 on the rear differential, and it's got 2 on the front, so it's called a 3-channel. 1 rear, 2 front.
And so you're telling me something that he did not say. He thought it just had the 2 in the front.
I'm guessing.
I don't know.
But see, I had a whole bunch of those S10s. We bought them in 94. I could be wrong, but you know how you find out? Call the local auto parts store and say, hey, I got this S10, you know, blah, 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 and tell me, how many wheel sensors does it have? And if it tells you 2 front and 1 on the diff, then it's a three-channel. He could be right. This could just be front-wheel ABS, but I don't think I'm going to bet on that one. I'm going to bet on the three-channel, and I don't even think it's a four-channel because it's too old.
Yeah. Now, one thing, though, he said no more does the ABS light come on other than start, whereas, you know, he said now the scanner won't show anything unless red light's on. So.
Well, no, there's going to be history in there. Unless he cleared the history. So you can go in the scanner and you can look at historical data, but then it allows you to clear it. So some guys will clear it and then go drive it. The light won't come back on, and then they don't know what to do. But
that's what's happened.
Okay, so key on, the light comes on, that's called bulb check. We're checking to make sure the bulb's good. Then you start it up, there's no light that stays on, and for the next 15 or 20 minutes, there's no lights. Sometimes you can imagine that the wheel sensors are magnetic. So they're going to have a pole piece and a moving piece, and they're going to be magnets. Well, they pick up metal from the brakes, and they pick up metal from the roadway and dirt. It's not uncommon for us to take an air gun on something we can't identify, pop the four wheels off, and just dust off all four sensors and send them back on the road. And about 20% of the time, that fixes the problem. 20% of the time. And we don't care which one it is, just dust them off.
Right. Okay.
Okay?
Yes, sir. Good talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. Tom, are you here, living here now, or are you just visiting?
Oh, no. No, I'm up north of St. Louis. So.
Oh, today, right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, when I come back, I'm going to tell my Chamber of Commerce story. Is that okay?
Oh, sure.
Okay, I will. I promise you.
All right.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'll set it up now. I'm on the radio on Saturday morning from 10 to 12. They use me to follow up big-time sports in St. Louis. This was years ago. So I'm talking about the difference between people in St. Louis and people in Phoenix. And I'm talking about the difference in what they say and how they act and stuff like that. And then I tell this really stupid story. And unbeknownst to me, they're having a national convention in St. Louis. And I'm talking to the Phoenix group as well. Well, when it comes to car repair shops, Sun City has a really good one, Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. I've known the family since 1982. Chuck and his son Derek run the operation, and they're good people. They're honest people. They know right from wrong. So if you're in Sun City, the only shop I can recommend there is Auto Dynamics. Real quick. So I'm on radio with KMOX in St. Louis. I don't understand, and I don't know that there's a Chamber of Commerce meeting, a National Chamber of Commerce meeting there. And during the lunch break, they're piping in the car show. And I said something like this. I said, you know, there is a world of difference between the people in St. Louis and the people in Phoenix. The people in St. Louis, they honk and they wave and they smile and say, sure, go ahead and pull in front of me. And the people in Phoenix, they honk and they flip you the bird. Well, that didn't go over real well at the luncheon at the Chamber of Commerce. So I get a call from Jim Tazarek at the other radio station I used to be at. I loved Jimmy. I loved him. He was the greatest guy in the world. He taught me more about radio than anybody. He said, you're in really big trouble. And I said, why? And he goes, well, you said something in St. Louis about the Phoenix patron. And I said, yeah, I did. How do you know? And he goes, well, they were having a national conference for Chamber of Commerce, and Phoenix was there, and they heard it. He said, we'll talk about it when you get back home. So anyway, I had to say I'm sorry, and nobody cares. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Jerry, you're up first.
I'm looking for a recommendation to have someone just check my transmission. I just thought I would go to a transmission shop rather than just my shop.
Okay.
And
let me ask you a question. What kind of car is it, and how many miles do you have on it?
It's a BMW 325, and it has about 110,000 miles on it.
Okay.
Has the transmission? 2006.
Okay. And it's an 06, you said?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. And have you had any fluid or filters changed on that BMW in 100,000 miles?
Okay. I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to hurt you any. I would like to. What part of town are you in?
24th Street and Camelback area.
Okay. Go to 25th Street Auto.
Uh huh.
Talk to Billy. Uh-huh. And here's the thing. Transmission shops just do transmission. They don't have the wide variety of cars to work on and the knowledge base that us general repair guys do. You don't need anybody that has BMW tattooed on their upper arm to work on this car because it has gas right. and fuel and brakes. Just like, you know, it's just like a horse. It's just a different colored horse. That's all it is. So Billy's right around the corner from you. He's as honest as the day is long. And when you meet him, you'll look up and you'll say, now I understand why Mark likes him. So don't do it on Monday morning or Friday afternoon. I would say to Billy, I would like you to check my fluid and smell it and tell me what you think. I would like you to drive it and maybe put it through its pace a little more aggressively than I would normally drive it. And I would like your opinion on what I should do. Let me tell you in advance. Have you owned this car since it was new?
No, I got it off lease.
Okay.
So I got it, yeah.
How long have you had it and how long was it on lease?
It was on a lease for 3 years, I guess, whatever, 36 months or whatever that, yeah.
Okay.
About that.
And how many miles?
And I...
Go ahead.
And it had 35,000 miles on it when I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you don't sound like anybody who's going to be out ripping the rear tires off the thing.
2 minutes.
And I'm quite sure. A transmission's typically going to last. We see people of yours and mine age range that pull 150,000, 200,000 miles out of an automatic transmission. In addition to that, it's just like anything else. There's going to be symptoms that are going to start when you slam the door someday, and that's the beginning of the end. There's not going to be a complete failure. There hardly ever is. There's plenty of warning signs that lead up to that. So I would say to Billy, look at my transmission fluid, go drive my car, tell me at 106,000 miles, 110,000 miles, what do you think I should do? And I'm going to bet that he's going to look in the owner's manual and he's going to say, let's do the fluid and filter and let's see what's in the pan. If there's nothing in the pan but normal byproducts of the clutches, normal byproducts of the clutch activity, Billy's going to say, there's nothing in the pan, there's nothing dead, there's no big bolts, nuts, washers, or broken pieces of metal. I put fluid and a filter in it. See you later. That's what's probably going to happen.
Okay.
And I want to tell you something. I don't get a dime out of that referral. Do you understand? I'm not sending you there because Billy's going to give me 10%. Okay? That doesn't happen. Well, good luck to you, Jerry. Thank you very much. Steve, you're up next.
Hi, Mark. I've got a 99 Jeep Cherokee Limited that I had trailered over from California just before Christmas. And when I got it over here to Phoenix, there is a squeaky noise at the front. You speed up the engine, it'd squeak a little bit more. So I thought, it's just the serpentine belt up there, or maybe the idler pulley. So I went ahead and changed those since, low-cost items, and it turned out the idler pulley did need to be changed. That wasn't the source of the squeaking. So I looked around, finally online, I saw somebody that talked about the distributor, and more specifically about a squeak that can develop between the distributor cap and the rotor. And so I thought, well, so I pulled the cap off. I put a little dielectric grease just on top of the rotor where the contact is made, mm-hmm. and the squeak went away.
Okay.
And there are other people in there that talked about the bearing and the distributor and all that sort of stuff. But now we don't use it much, but it's been driven. We had some guests out of town, so it's been driven for a little bit. And I hear the squeak very lightly starting to come back.
Well, I think what I'd want to do first is put a piece of a fuel line up in your ear or a piece of vacuum line and use it like a stethoscope and go down in that area of the distributor cap and see if you can actually hear it coming from that area. The fact that you put dielectric grease on the tang on the rotor is good. That's no harm, no foul.
Okay.
I've never seen this before. I've never heard this before. I've never fixed this before. But the first thing you have to do is make sure that we're talking about the noise and the dab of grease in the same place. So it's just really that simple. I've never seen or heard that before. We don't put dabs of grease on top of the rotor tangs on distributors. We just never have. But it's okay that you did that. But this whole idea of please, I want everyone to know that I'm not ragging on Steve. You can't believe how many times Google and the internet come up in my world. Yesterday, a well-educated, highly educated, successful businessman is telling me about some guy that told him that he needed to put a filter in the cooling system of his diesel, otherwise his engine would go to heaven. And there is no relationship between a filter in the cooling system that, what, takes pieces of flakes of calcium out of your cooling system? How is that going to wipe your motor out unless, of course, it fails, and then you overheat it like an idiot? So I get so wound up when I get on this internet thing because there's people out there that are just spewing stuff that has nothing. It's not grounded in my world. So I admire the fact that you did what you did, because what you did is exactly what I would have done. If that's the case, put a little dielectric there, grease is gone, noise is gone. Then, because see, one of the button on the cap is going to be spring-loaded, and it has to go up and down. So, I don't know, why don't you pull that spring out of there, why don't you pack a little bit of grease up inside there? Maybe you greased where the tip of the carbon hits the rotor, but maybe it's within the shaft of the bottom of the rotor where that small pieces of carbon goes up and in and out. I don't know.
Yeah, I looked around, and I was prepared for it to be bearing on the distributor shaft or something like that, because those, and I thought, gee, it's a lot easier. And that's literally all I did. And immediately that squeak that I've been chasing was gone.
Okay, and here's the deal. When the bearing goes out of the distributor, it doesn't come back. when you start rattling that shaft, it don't come back.
Right.
And so you fixed the problem, but really and truly, if you would have been like the other 95% of my male friends, you would have a new distributor in there with the old cap and rotor, and you'd be calling me telling me that you replaced the distributor because Herman from a federal prison in New Hampshire told you that you needed a new distributor. So
you know him too, huh?
I know him well. He's my nemesis. He's doing radio. Anyway, I got to run, Steve. Thank you very much for that. I thank you. And I'm especially enamored by the fact that you fixed it in the way that you did. Bob and Bob, stay right there. We'll be right back. If you've got a diesel truck, there's going to come a time where you're going to need a diesel technician in front of you. It's true that anybody can change the oil and rotate the tires and do brakes on your diesel truck, but when it starts in the morning and there's white smoke or blue smoke, or it won't quit smoking at all, you better find a diesel expert like, for instance, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair in North Phoenix, I-17 on Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is a diehard diesel service, repair, and parts distributor and vendor. He's a great guy. He knows the right and wrong about diesels, and he's not too embarrassed to say, I don't know your answer. He's not too embarrassed to say, I can't find it right now, but he'll say that once or twice a year. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, he has a good website, 24 hours a day on their website, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Let's go to the phone, Bob's. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Speaker off. Okay.
Okay.
Mark, just came back from a trip out of the city somewhere else. Same story. I couldn't get over how courteous and nice the drivers were there, and got back to Phoenix, and same story, man, the aggressive, mean people. It must be all those Californicators coming over. I don't know.
No, wait a minute. You can't drop that bomb and then walk away from it. I know you're talking about the Midwest. Thank you for your comment, because it is true. It's just a different kind of philosophy. Now,
it is
up north where I'm at right now in Payson, because of the housing and all that kind of stuff, we're dominated with California and Colorado plates. It's that same way we're around. However, the other day I was at Home Depot, and this one gentleman was loading some plywood, and I said, can I help you? And he did. So we start talking, and I looked at his hands, and I said, you're a car guy. And he is. And we're talking and talking and talking. And he goes, I said, well, where are you from? And he looks at me and he goes, it's not real important. And I said, unless of course you're from prison, it is important. Yeah. So where are you from? He goes, Colorado. And I go, oh, I recognized your hands. I said, I work on cars too. He was from California. And I said, why did you say that? And he goes, I said, well, then tell everybody you're from Provo. Who cares? So anyway, you got a car problem. Let's go there.
car problem. Well, I'm curious. I would like your expertise. So many of the new cars have the turbos on them. How important is the cool down period? I don't have one yet. I'm looking at a couple. I live in an apartment complex where I'm way in the back. So it takes about a minute and a half, maybe two, sometimes 3 minutes at 5 miles an hour to get around to where I live. Is that enough to cool it down?
First of all, the turbo cool down is something that came from 150 years ago. Fred Flintstone and Barney, his buddy, used to talk about that. The answer is Mark will get off the freeway at Warner Road to go to the shop. I'll turn left, I'll go about a half a mile, I'll turn right, pull into the parking lot, I'll shut the damn thing off, and I don't care. I got 126,000 miles on my Dodge diesel. It's got a turbo. The turbo cool down is the EGT, the exhaust gas temperature. Now, the newer model cars have an EGT sensor, and that tells you what it is. When Mark is in the car and his wife's driving and the EGTs get to 1,500 degrees and the aluminum melts at 1,100, then I'm going to wake up out of my stupor and say to my wife, stop drag racing that Ford, okay? So the EGTs are real high, but when you put it in neutral, you can count to 10 and the EGTs are down to completely normal range. So don't worry about the EGTs. Don't worry about it. They're a non-issue of today.
Thank you. Thank you. Good day.
Okay. Thank you. All righty. Let's go to Marty. Marty, good morning. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Actually, Marty just dropped.
Marty just dropped. Okay. Well, let me tell you my other St. Louis story. They asked me to do a night show, so I'm in the night show. Hey, let's take Bob. Bob, you're in Washington, D.C. How are you today? Fine, fine. Listen, I have this maintenance light on my dashboard, and he said, I just changed my oil, and I don't know how to turn it off. And I said, okay. I said, well, where are you at? Can you pull over? Well, no. Why can't you pull over? I'm driving a cab. Yeah, so what? Pull over. I got a fare. Bob, just pull over. She's not going to care. It's a he. Bob, pull over. I'm going to turn your light off for you. Okay. And you can hear him talking to his fare. He goes, I'm going to pull over for just a minute. The guy on the radio wants to tell me how to fix this light. And the person in the back, he's, oh, yeah, go ahead. I'll learn too. So this is what you're going to do, Bob. You're going to pull off, put it in park, turn the key car off. You got your phone. Is your phone going to go off? No, it won't. Okay, good. Then I want you to turn the key on, and I want you to pump the throttle. Don't start the engine, Bob. Just turn the key to the on position where the dash light's light. The light's on, that red light's on, or yellow light. It's a yellow light. And I want you to push your pedal to the floor 5 times with me. Ready? 1, up, 2, up. Count to 5. And I said, okay, and then turn the key off and turn the light back on. Turn the key back on. Is the light gone? Yes. Go ahead and start the car. Car started. Okay, drive away. Is the light gone? Yes. There you go. Pass it on. And then he goes, the lady in the back seat wants to know where your shop's at. I said, in Arizona. Well, then people started holding their phones up to the cars, to their cars, to let me hear the noises. And it got out of hand in the Midwest, but it was a great time of my life, and I enjoyed the Midwest like you can't believe. There was just a whole lot of different people in the Midwest, and I don't think I had any of them ever call me up and call me the kind of names that sometimes I get called. But then again, I'm getting older and dumber as I go. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. I've known the Thompson family for at least 50 years. There is a time where the Thompson family and the Vivian family dominated the gas station business in the Mesa area. Well, their descendants, which is Brian and Thelma, they own Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. These two young people, Brian and his wife Thelma, have been in the gasoline business, and they know what gas smells like, and they don't like fingernails dirty with oil. That they were in that environment. The only shop in Mesa that I can recommend that you go visit is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been in that facility at Main Street just east of Stapley since 1970, and you won't find any nicer husband and wife couple that run an auto repair shop. And ladies, you can be assured that Thelma will watch out for you. She doesn't really need to, because the technicians and the staff are all good people. But Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa is the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend to you. So when we start talking about cars, here's what's important. Don't go to Google and query your car, because here's why. I get to talk to you. I get to ask you questions. And I'm probably going to be successful in diagnosing your car maybe 25% of the time. But what I'm going to give you in the conversation is things to watch out for. How does it do it cold? Does it do it hot? When you turn hard right, is the clunk there? When you turn hard right, left, is the clunk there? So I can help you develop a way to describe the problem and more importantly, show the problem to your garage. So you say, I can duplicate this problem. Can I borrow one of your technicians for 10 minutes and I'm going to show them about this noise I want you to address? That conversation alone will save you somewhere between $25 and $75 worth of diagnostic time if you can take a technician and show him how to make the noise. You can't imagine how beneficial that is, because we hear things you don't, our ears are more attuned, our ears are bigger than yours, all kinds of things can happen. 602-508-0960. We're going to come back in just a little bit, and we're going to do another hour of this fun and frivolity. So you're welcome to stack the line, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, then here's a 6888 number for you. 888-960-9696. 888-960, because this is 960 the Patriot, 9696. 888-960-9696. And that's toll-free outside the Phoenix metropolitan area. Car repair is easy so long as there's a give and take. What you don't want to do is go in and tell the shop that Homer, your next-door neighbor, said that you need a new water pump. You should say to them, I have a coolant leak. I would like you to diagnose where it's coming from and call me with an estimate. We're not going to do your work off of Homer's diagnosis. We want to take the radiator cap off. We want to put an air pump in its place. We look at the cap. It's an 11-pound cap. It holds 11 pounds of pressure. We pump your system up to 11 pounds. We then get a mirror and a flashlight, and if Homer's right, we just put the mirror underneath the water pump. We look up with our flashlight, and the weep hole is as dry as a bone. Well, he's wrong. So then we check this wing of the water pump and this wing of the water pump, and the water pump's as dry as can be. But above it, there's the intake manifold, and the driver's front corner of the intake manifold is leaking coolant, and it's running right down the front of the head onto the oil pan and off the bottom. So Homer said he thought that was a water pump leak, so he told you to go have your water pump done. But in reality, it's the intake manifold above it that's leaking. The water pump would not have fixed your leak, and hopefully the shop would have identified that the leak had been misdiagnosed before they replaced your water pump. So just give us the symptoms, and here's how that should sound. Mr. Salem, I've got a clunking noise in the right side of my car, and here's how you get it to kind of act up. Find a parking lot in a church close by and turn the steering wheel all the way to the left and make three slow loops. Then stop, turn it to the right, and make three right loops. And every time you change directions, you're going to hear a thump. And I want you to identify what that thump is and call me with an estimate. Can you give me a diagnostic charge for that? And here's the problem. Today, it's just the old tombstone days. No, but you're asking us to give you an estimate for something we haven't done before, and we don't know how long it's going to take us. We can have a technician out there for 20 minutes making left and right loops in the parking lot of the church next door. We can do that, but we've got him out of service. It also might very well be that he can do it in the parking lot behind the shop and identify it. The diagnostic part, I think most of us have decided to just do a range. And I like this. It will not be less than $35. And it won't be more than $100. I'll call you when we get up close to that. I'm going to ask you. Now, if you can make it happen, why can't you just wait right now? I'll get somebody to go with you. And you, can you duplicate it right now? Yes, I can. Can you be half an hour late to work? Yes, I can. Good, let's do it now. That's the kind of conversation. Now, that conversation can happen on Monday morning or Friday afternoons because for obvious reasons, those are times that we can't just have our old staff out driving cars. I'm talking about car repair shops in general. So those are the kinds of issues that we have. What's your diagnostic fee? The diagnostic fee is the path necessary to go from point A to confirmation that your diagnosis is the correct diagnosis and you need this part and this labor to fix it. That's a very difficult thing. So the diagnostic window today is this open. From the bottom end is $50 and then the top end is $150. And that's what most of us are saying because you're asking us to give you a number that we don't know, but we'll know it'll be in that range. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Four minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock for the second hour of our show, we're talking about car repair, car problems. What should I do about this? My husband and I disagree about this. What weight oil do you put in your wife's car? Does your wife change your own oil? All that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960-9696. And you can get right in like everybody else. Blackwell Automotive is up at 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for many, many years in that northeast area of the Valley, the North Scottsdale area, all the way up to 101. And when it goes west, all that area is Tom's. He can handle that area. It's difficult to find a shop in that area because one of the things I need is some long-term business skills. And sometimes what happens is you get a shop up in a particular area of town that's bought and sold numerous times and nobody has 5 years of experience. Well, Tom does. So if you're up in that northeast area, Blackwell Automotive is a mighty good place to go. Nick, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have an intermittent service engine soon light on a 01 Super Duty with a 7.3.
Okay, you want to sell that real quick?
And I've... A what?
You want to sell that real quick?
well, not this minute, but anyway. So starting it up, there's no service engine soon light. Drive it. Once it, as I'm driving, it kind of comes on, and then later it goes off. And I put my scan tool on it. There's no codes. And then I also set the scan tool so I can monitor the engine functions. I just can't find the problem. It just comes on and off whenever it wants to.
And, well, in the days your truck was made, the service engine soon light was checked by the check engine light and all that kind of stuff. And we have all these different things. And yours is a 7.3, so it's a diesel, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think... I know that in the old days, we're talking about the old days, that we could get an intermittent problem that wouldn't be captured by the computer on board or the scanner by driving it around. The scanner that we normally have, it allows us to look at serial stream data, so it's going to give us numbers that you have to understand. Your scanner is just probably not going to do that. It's not going to show mass airflow, and it's not going to show fuel pressure and all that other stuff. So I'm not quite sure.
Well, it does show a lot of that stuff. It does show a lot of that stuff, but I don't understand what a lot of it is. So I don't, I'm just mostly looking for codes.
Yeah, and the code just tells you that the computer sees this area of the truck is deficient. But the code doesn't mean, if you have an oxygen sensor code, I want to tell you, 99 times out of 100 when you have an oxygen sensor code, are you actually going to replace the oxygen sensor? The oxygen sensor, it's, and you don't have those. So I think what I would do, what part of town do you live in?
Peoria.
Okay. I'd probably go talk to Nate, or just call Nate over at Strictly Diesel. Tell him you got a 7.3, you've got an intermittent one, and ask him if there is a pattern failure you should look for. Now, I would like it if you called me and you said, by the way, I've got an extended crank when it's hot. Or I've got an extended crank when it's cold that doesn't reappear till the next morning. If you could give him any additional information of changes of habit, that might be something. But this is not something that on a 1 to 10 scale, this ain't a 10. This isn't a 10. This is a 4 or a 5 to track this down. But more important, until the light comes on and stays on, you have that option. So if you're not pumping, you know, black smoke out the tailpipe, if you're not pumping white smoke out the tailpipe, if the thing starts cold, starts warm, accelerates hard, goes 60, 70, 80 miles an hour, pulls the trailer with the horses in it, really and truly, you have two choices. You can start looking around for something to replace, or you can just wait till it gets worse and easier to find. That's
yeah.
it.
All those things you mentioned are all normal. You know, I mean, there's no smoke, and it starts the same all the time. And I was thinking maybe the temperature might be going up, and I watched the temperature gauge, and it looks fine.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm at a loss to figure out what's wrong with it.
Well, and so when the temperature, I want your temperature gauge to be in the half range of the temperature, maybe a little low, a little high. Are we there?
Yeah, it's a little lower. It's a little lower than that.
Okay, fair. Good. Those are the kinds of things that we want. We don't want to run that diesel cold. And as a matter of fact, I like it when mine's over the halfway mark, because I know that I'm boiling the water out of the engine that my wife puts in when she putts around town, because she takes my truck, because it holds more junk than her car does. So,
yeah.
So, and you and I are probably the same age, and I'm sure your right foot's a little heavier than the normal person's, and so every once in a while that 7.3 will stand up on its hind legs and rear its front tires off the ground, and you'll take off like crazy. And usually to show some little kid in a Honda 4-cylinder next door to you at the red light that his little bitty ring is nothing compared to the horses you got underneath the hood of that big dog. So now that I've
I actually enjoy gas, and I'm out with a little diesel smell too.
Okay, well, we've gotten enough trouble already, Tom. But I did touch base with Nate, not on a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon, but call Nate, said Mark Salem says you might have a comment on it. He's going to ask you the same thing I did. That 7.3 is worth a hell of a lot of money. That truck could easily bring as much as you paid for it brand new.
Yeah, it's a monster.
That 7.3 is one of the first, and it's the best, and everybody knows that that is a mountain-moving engine in your Ford, which...
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, Bob, good luck to you. Thank you very much. Nick, you're up next. How can I help you? Oh, that was Nick, wasn't it?
Yes, that was Nick.
Oh, Nick, that was a 7.3 diesel. Okay, and we got Gary next. I'm sorry, Gary.
Okay, Gary dropped.
Okay.
Go to Kevin.
Kevin. Okay, boy, they're just really... Kevin, good morning, buddy. How can I help you?
Yeah, good morning. Good to talk to you after listening to you all these years.
Thank you.
I have a quick question for you. You know, I've heard you and your son Alan talk about the camshaft lifter problem on the GM V8s, mostly pertaining to the truck engine, or the truck side. Does that pertain to the Camaro and Corvette also?
I want you to call an Alan and ask him that, but it's been a long time since that they've had the hood of a Camaro and stuff, and actually we have a 6-liter in one of our Camaros and stuff, mm-hmm. and so but it's also the variable valve timing stuff, and so that's not likely to be in the older model cars because we didn't have it back then, where we didn't have cylinder select and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's a question that you call and you say, and don't do it on Monday morning or Friday afternoons, but you call and ask for Alan, and then just say, your dad said that you won't know the answer to this, but are these two cars I have, these two engine combinations I have, related to that camshaft lifter concern?
Yeah. Now, I'm speculating or whether to buy a new Camaro or one last toy after I retired here. And I wasn't sure if that would be a good move or not. I've listened to your talk in the past about that lifter cam problem. So, yeah, I will do that then. Thank you very much, Mark.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and I'm going to put down T.O.T. Allen. The lifter problem, the camshaft problem, is a well-known problem on the high-performance engines for GM, including in police cars and Tahoes and stuff like that. The problem is we don't know, someone does know, but we don't know, the industry doesn't know, whether the lifters are damaging the camshaft or the camshaft is damaging the lifters, but it doesn't really make any difference because by the time we start getting all kinds of engine codes and flashing lights and engine rumblings and rough idle, then we take it apart and we've got a damaged lifter, a damaged cam, and a damaged lifter. So we see that kind of thing going on. Originally it was oil, and then it was this, and then you used Valvoline instead of Pennzoil, and now you should have used Pennzoil instead of Chevron, and all that stuff goes on and on and on, because it's all from that guy in New Hampshire in a federal prison that has a computer who starts all this yapping about something he doesn't know anything about. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And, Gil, we have a caller. Who might that be?
Yes, it's Gary.
He's Gary, good morning.
Good morning. I just have a question and maybe need an education. I'm going to be towing a U-Haul trailer a couple of thousand miles, leaving Arizona, so I'm going up and down hills. And I read about towing capacity. It doesn't mean much to me, but I'm planning on towing probably the mid-sized trailer that U-Haul has. I don't know. Transmission, I assume. Well, any questions about transmission, and do I let it shift itself going up and down hills, or do I paddle shift it, or anything I should be aware of that I shouldn't do if I'm pulling a load?
Okay, well, the very first thing you have to do is look in your owner's manual and find GCWR, gross combined weight rating. Now, when you go to U-Haul, you tell them, do the math in front of me, young man. They're gonna do that pretty good. My truck has the ability to carry 6,000 pounds loaded, and that's full of fuel, all my buddies and all their girlfriends and all of our beer, 6,000, and it's got a gross combined weight of, 13,000. So that means you got a 7,000 pound trailer grossed. That's the trailer plus its load plus the truck and all the girls in the load, and that's 12,000 pounds, and you got 13 on a gross weight, a gross combined. So you have to do the math. U-Haul will do that for you. As far as your transmission is concerned, you can do either one.
2 minutes.
I would suggest that you forget the shifter and just let your throttle do the action. So as you start climbing up a hill and you're hauling your trailer and you start losing a little speed, you're going to go deeper into the throttle, and pretty soon the computer's going to be looking at all the flow charts and going, in order to maintain some horsepower and torque on this thing, I'm going to have to drop a gear. And it drops a gear by itself. Now, if you want to hold that position, then manually move your selector to hold that position. It's probably going to go out of overdrive first or lockup first, and then it'll go into your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or whatever you've got. But I like it when I can, my foot will put me in a gear, and then I'll use the shift selector to hold that gear. So the minute I come up on a slow car, I back off the throttle, the son of a gun up shifts on me. Now I'm losing speed. I want to pass somebody, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden I've got a problem. So that's why I like to manually control it at the appropriate times. But if no one's in front of you, then you just put your throttle where you want it, put your speed where you want it, and just use your throttle to do that. The computer will do a better job to shift it, and if you need to get aggressive, just remember, just stuff that thing to the floor, and the computer will pick which gear is appropriate for the grade, the load, and the demand. So the answer is you can do it either way. I do it like I described it. Once I get to where I'm at, I just pull the shifter down and leave it there.
Okay, well, thank you. I kind of suspected to leave it alone. I've been up and down the mountains in Arizona all the time before, and it just does it seamlessly without any feeling, but with a load behind it. I understand what you're saying, and thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And that's it. That is the answer. It's either way is going to be okay for the car you're driving. Either way is going to be okay. The computer will know the load, and it will make the appropriate decisions for you, unless you want to be more aggressive, and then I told you how to do that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There's 5 lines open, so you're going to get one if you call. 602-508-0960. So when you take your car into a shop and you want to talk to them, I'm telling you that most of us, the last thing we want to hear is what the guy at Google said. We don't want to know what they... What we want our customer to do is stand in front of us, year, make, and model. I've owned the car since it was new. It's got 110,000 miles on it. This is what's going on. When I do 62 miles an hour and throttle gently, it shudders. Then if I let go of the throttle, then it shudder goes away. If I go harder on the throttle, there is no shudder. That's what we want. We don't want Google telling us how to fix your car, because we're not going to fix your car based on what some guy said on Google. We need you to tell us. So Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange says that is an issue with transmissions, because people will Google their car and then they'll put transmission problem. Then they'll have all kinds of transmission problems, when in reality they had a bad tire. So the bad tire caused the vibration that somebody put my car, my year, make, and model, bad vibration, and I think it's the transmission, and boom, we're in the transmission never, never land. And all it was a bad tire. So let's forget all that transmission never, never land. And when you go into Phil's, just say, car's outside. Take it. Can you take it for a drive? And I can duplicate the problem, because that's what we want. Automatic transmission exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Let's go to Don. Don, good morning.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
Daughter's got a 2010 Highlander with it's limited with all the fancy dash. She just, last night she says, my air conditioning is blowing, but it's not blowing hard. So I got out there and it's blowing on like speed 3.
Okay.
She just called me back. She says, she's on her way to get her hair cut. She says, it's blowing like gangbusters. And she just now called me back again and says, it's intermittent. Is that got a rheostat in it? Or is
you
it
know,
just a bad motor like what the old GMs used to?
Well, normally we're going to have some kind of rheostat because we're going to apply 12 volts or 13 volts to the blower, but the rheostat's going to reduce that voltage to give us fan speed 1, 2, and 3. But then we're going to bypass the rheostat and just run direct battery power to the fan on number 4. So the rheostat is kind of like, for other people, Don, not you, but for everybody else, it's kind of like the gas valve on your gas stove. If you open it up all the way, you got a nice big blue flame. If you close it down, it looks like somebody just lit a paper match. That's kind of how it is. In your particular case, the first thing I'd start doing is start playing with the knobs. Start kind of manually manipulating them, kind of roughhousing them without breaking anything. And tell her to hang her hat on speed 1, 2, or 3 and leave 4 alone, or put it on 4 all the time. But we need to know which side of that circuit we're going to work on. If she says, hey, Dad, 1, 2, and 3, they work pretty good. The problem is really when I go to high, and intermittently it's low and intermittently it's high. But depending on the mileage, Don, it could be a blower motor itself. If there's any noise with the blower motor when it's first started up or after it's been running a while, then that noise is unacceptable, and it might be a blower motor. But then again, Don, I know that you bake birthday cakes at bashes, so I'm probably talking over your head.
No, you're not. It's all computerized, and I'm going, it's out of my league for sure, because I'm old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Just like my tow truck. It's got all manual stuff.
I agree. Don't let the electronics. We're still using a fan switch, and we're going to use two different circuits on the wiring schematic. So 1, 2, and 3 goes this way, and 4 goes right from the battery to the blower. So it's going to be the same. Almost always the switch is the problem. It's not the computer circuitry. It's none of that. It's probably going to be the switch, depending on how many miles and how many times that she spilled her beer on the knobs of the radio or the air conditioning.
So replace the motor, yes?
Yes, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, and you know what? You know that shop on Warner? Just take it over there and just tell them to replace the motor.
That's a good idea.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Don. Thank you very much. Terry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Actually, Terry dropped, so let's go to the next caller.
Okay, we got David. David, good morning.
Hi, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
I hope you can help me with this question. It's probably going to be more of a body shop question, possibly.
Okay.
On my mid-70s Pontiac, they use like these roof rail rails. It's like a two-piece. And when I had my car painted, I took them out because the rubber seals were bad anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm putting them back in.
Okay.
And now I'm running into the problem with the seals, these aftermarket seals, where when I roll up my power window, it gets caught on the rubber on the kind of like the door channel.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps getting caught, and the window won't roll up.
Okay. Manual or electric?
Your power.
Okay. So you're talking about the weather stripping in the square window or area, right?
Yeah, and there's like a bigger channel that goes over the window, and then kind of on the back side there's a smaller channel where the seal will go in, and it'll
okay.
Where it kind of like the beveled edge of the window
Wait a minute. None of that's making sense to me and anybody else. Let me ask you a couple questions. Is it a two-door or a four-door?
Two-door.
And is it a rear quarter window?
That rail butts up to that quarter window.
Okay. There's a couple of things that you could probably do. All of that stuff is adjustable once you get the door panel off of it, so you should be able to center up the window. And sometimes it's just a memory issue. So you have brand new weather strip, and you're having a tough time getting the window to hit the middle of the weather strip, and sometimes it's just a matter of rolling up the window and leaving it there until we have a couple of cold and warm days. So, but any window facility and any body shop can probably fix this and adjust it for you, or at least explain to you how to do it. And the body shop that I'd probably call would probably call Heather up at Phoenix Body Works and ask her if one of her guys would look at it real quick. You can quickly demonstrate the problem and ask them two questions. Is this something I can fix? And if not, how much would you charge me to realign and rearrange this? That's what I would do.
Okay. Because the other thing I noticed, too, about it is the window. I mean, I know you can adjust kind of the window with, they kind of have these metal adjusters where they have felt on them, but over time the felt goes away. But it's still, the window has a lot of, like, slop in it.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying is the door panel has to come off, and there's some adjustments in there for the scissor lift. So the window regulator is just a big pair of scissors. And all four corners have to be in the right position to raise and lower the window. So somebody who does auto glass is somebody that can do that. I'd probably look for the gray-haired guy, because a lot of the kids today really know Hondas and Toyotas real well and Subarus and stuff. But when it comes to readjusting a General Motors or a Ford or a Chrysler back windows in a 70s car is probably not going to be on their dinner plate.
Okay.
So what part of town do you live in?
I'm in Prescott Valley, but we've had our car repaired at Phoenix Body Works before, and they did a really good job on it. So
I
probably wound up calling them.
And that's how you started. Thank you for bringing that up. Hi, I am a customer of yours. I was happy with the last repair you did. I have this 70s da-da-da, and I've got a problem. I would like you, can I buy 15 minutes of your time? Could you just look at it and give me advice or give me an estimate for the adjustment? That's how I'd start it. Because, first of all, I'm a customer. Woo! Second of all, you're asking me to do something, and I'm thinking to myself, on a 1 to 10 scale, this could be about a number 2 conversation. This ain't going to be real in-depth. And Jason over there, who's got gray hair growing out of his ears, is probably can put this together in just maybe 20 minutes. So, yeah, bring it on in. Let me take a look at it. So that's how I would handle it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good luck to you, David. That's a great question in a 70 Pontiac. That's something that I admire, especially if it's like a GTO or something like that, or a Le Mans. That's good enough. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Dennis, you'll be my next caller. And anybody else, we have four lines open, 602-508-0960. My email address is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question or a comment, you're welcome to leave it there. I would appreciate it if you'd leave your phone number there, because sometimes I want to talk to you and I don't want to type for the rest of my life. So if you could just give me your phone number and tell me what time is a good time to call, you know, after lunch or something, that'd be great. 602-508-0960. Well, 54 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to noon, Arizona time, talking about cars and car repair questions and stuff like that. But, you know, there's all kinds of stuff on talk radio, right? And I am a professional financier, okay? Let me tell you how to make money, okay? This is simple. This is the way my dad taught me, okay? First of all, you pay off your house. You pay off your house as fast as you can. That way you have between $1,000 and $2,000 a month that's in your pocket and not anywhere else. Then you pay off all your cars. And when you get done with paying off all your cars, then you got another $1,000 or $2,000 in your pocket. Now all of a sudden you have $4,000 a month in your pocket, and that's what personal wealth is all about. You don't have any car payments, and you don't have any house payments. That's what you do. So if you get a house when you're 20, at 40 you should be able to have everything pretty much all paid off, and that's what it's all about. Then you can invest it with those guys that are going to tell you how to spend your money with them and make a whole lot of money. But in reality, if you just pay the hell everything off, you'll have a whole lot more money of your own. How's that? I cross over and I digress. I don't do any other things other than car repair. 602-508-0960. Larry Harger's Auto Service is at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and he's been around a long time, since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto, and they've been together and working in car repair for their entire married lives. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, I would strongly suggest that you try them for something simple so that you could introduce yourself to them. But I'm quite sure that they will provide service to you that very few other people can. I'm telling you, in the top 50 shops in town, they are one of the top 50. And I've even sent cars to them that my shop couldn't fix that they did. So they are very, very good. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Dennis, how can I help you today?
Well, nice talking with you, Ken. I have a 03 Dodge, one ton, Cummings.
Okay.
Okay. I have in the last couple of months, I've noticed I haven't been driving it much. If it sits for 3 days, it runs the battery down. Well, of course, I went and got the battery checked, and they replaced it. It still does that very same thing. When it's off and shut down completely, I can take and wiggle the it doesn't matter, the negative side off, and I get a slight arc. It's not a snap arc. I know that, you know, there's a spark there. So it appears to me that it is drawing current. And with a meter, it showed me it was drawing some sort of current when it was shut off.
Okay. They all do that. I mean, every car in the world does that. There's going to be a keep alive something in there. But you're going about this on you're looking at the tail end of the horse, and when you really ought to be looking in her throat. So you're just at the wrong end. An electrical systems check. This is a diesel?
Yes, diesel, yeah.
Doesn't it have two batteries?
It did. I took the one out. I don't need it in Arizona. I needed it back east.
Okay. I've never had anybody do that before, but I can tell you, I own quite a few Dodge trucks, and my son owns, and we work on Dodge every day long, all day long, and I'm not quite sure that's, what did you do with those cables?
Those cables, I just dead-ended them at the other end, and it doesn't pop the relay anymore.
Okay.
You know, to switch it over to, draw on the auxiliary battery.
Okay.
I did that when it was virtually new, 20 years ago.
Okay, I your electrical system is way out of normal, and I would tell you that I think that you're looking at the wrong end of the horse, and I would tell you that most of us charge somewhere between $30 and $50 for what we call an electrical systems analysis. So we're going to charge both batteries, and we're going to check both batteries, and then we're going to check the amp draw when the key is in your pocket with, and we're not going to disconnect cables and look for spark. We're going to use inductive amp probes, and we're going to know what the volt drop is. And then we're going to know that the battery voltage is 12.9, and then we're going to start it up, and it better go up to 13.9, and then we better start out at about 10 amps, and then we should be able to clock that baby up to about 50, 60 amps. If we left the headlights on for about 10 minutes before we started it up. So there's a very sophisticated way to do all of that. And until you do all of that, you skipped over the battery pretty quick, and you don't have the ability to check the battery. So you know what the battery voltage is when it's in cranking mode? What is the battery voltage when it's in cranking mode?
I don't have the exact battery voltage. I'm using the gauge as a norm.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, and after it sits for 3 or 4 days, that voltage is low. That takes a long time for my amp gauge to come up to the 14 that it normally sits on.
Okay, well, 14 is fine. No, the amp gauge isn't going to be 14. I think that you're talking about the volt gauge because it's 12 to 14. But nevertheless, we don't fix cars looking at the dash gauge. We use the equipment that we use underneath the hood. I would strongly suggest that you do something with, you know, $30 to $50 and just have somebody charge and test the battery, test the alternator operation both at idle and at wide open or with high RPM. Check the alternator, the regulator, check it for shorts and draws and all that other kind of stuff. But 9 out of 10 times when I hear this story, it's the battery that's the problem. So unless somebody had the ability to test the battery with the proper load to duplicate the Cummins cranking over, then you're still chasing your tail. That's the best I can do, Dennis. You really need to take it to somebody that has the equipment necessary to check it out, because the old spark on the cable, we stopped doing that in 1947. That's not anything scientific at all. So we didn't know it then, but we do know it now, that spark, when you touch the negative to the terminal, that's okay. And that's nothing that would determine that the alternator or the battery is bad. Got to run, Dennis. Thank you. Good luck, Bob. How can I help you?
We're going to go to break.
Oh, yes, we're going to go to break. But Bob and Nick, you stay right there because we'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday, we're here talking about cars from 10 to noon every Saturday. And if you'd like to send me an email, it's Mark with a K, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to get to the calls. But before I do that, let me tell you about Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell Road. Here's the really nifty thing about Kurtz. He's friends with all the people around him. He's friendly. He's good. He's not going to stand on somebody else's shoulder and thump his chest and tell everybody he's the best guy in town. Kurtz is a good guy. And all the neighbors, the parts people around him, they like him. They respect him. Eric is his right-hand person. The two of them are a pair that it's difficult to draw a better pair than those two. So if you live near Bell Road and I-17 on the northeast corner, Kurtz Automotive, and if you don't have a repair shop, I promise, no matter if you have a gas or a diesel, they can handle your problems and you will be fine with how they treat you. That's Kurtz Automotive. Kurtz is with a C. Let's go to the phones. Bob, you're up next.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
My wife bought a new 2021 Equinox with the 1.5 liter turbo, you know.
Uh-huh.
When do you think we should do the first oil change?
What oil does it call for? Is it like a 5?
Zero W20.
Oh. I think it's going to call for 10 to 12,000 mile intervals. But if it were my car, well, first of all, are you mad at her?
No. Why?
Sounds like you're mad at her.
No, I just don't like zero W20 oil. It seems awfully watery.
No. Here, let me just teach you something real quick. Put your hands together like you're praying for forgiveness.
I know, peanut butter.
Peanut butter.
I don't want to use peanut butter
and water. That's it. 020 is a fabulous oil. I put it in my diesel. I put 020 in my diesel. So, and I mean, I'm pulling big loads. I'm pulling big trailers and bobcats and you know, construction equipment and farm equipment. So I think I would probably change the oil and the filter at about the 5,000-6,000 mile mark, and then I would go with the maintenance reminder on the dashboard. I would, when it says you're due for an oil change, I would do it. I think you're going to be in the 10 to 12,000 mile oil change intervals, and chances are that might be once a year for her. Am I close to being 10 to 12,000 a year for her?
Well, it goes by the, you know, the oil life monitor, you know, and she had a 2015 Equinox,
mm-hmm.
and then zero. If I let it bump all the way to zero, she was at about 7,000 miles.
Okay, and
but
it is.
I don't know if they've changed the algorithm, you know,
no,
I don't know.
It is a good algorithm. It's how often does she bring it up to full temperature? How fast is it going? What's the RPM and all that stuff? I'd go by the oil monitor. And I wouldn't call a tow truck when an oil mile owner says zero. I wouldn't do that. But, no, the synthetic oil is going to make that motor last a really long time. That is premium oil, no matter what brand it is. So it's just, we just know that the lighter weight oil we put in there and the tolerances can handle it just with, and the lubricating, the lubricity ability of the oil to keep the metal from touching one another is 10 times better than peanut butter. But anyway, you tell her, I think that she's going to really love that little turbocharger, and you're probably mad because it can probably run circles around whatever that you're driving. You still got that Edsel?
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway, thank you for letting me tease you, Bob. Good luck to you. Nick, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
A little bit more in-depth question. I have a 1995 Ford Crown Victoria LX. Like a long story short, it was misfiring. I tried the spark plug wires, new spark plug, eventually compressed and tested cylinders and found out it was the front driver's side cylinder wasn't having compression, and did the old oil test to figure out whether it was a cylinder or a valve. And based on that, I think it's the valve. I got the wire harness and everything pulled off. And before I take the head off, I was just wondering if maybe you have an opinion or any experience with that year range of Ford Crown Vic, or if that you would know like what the problem might be with why it might be misfiring or why it has no compression.
Well, you're not there yet, but you're almost there. Just take the valve cover off and take the rockers off, number one. And then with a hammer, gently, just tap both valves and see if they sound the same. You want them to have the same kind of heavy knock. And you're not trying to open them a mile. You're trying to open them an eighth of an inch or less. So tap both intake and exhaust, and let's listen to it. Let's see if they're seating. Let's see if the spring is broken. And after you've taken the rockers off of that cylinder's rocker assembly, the two valves, then run your compression test and see where you're at. Put your finger over the spark plug, because we're not going to have the intake valve open and sucking air in, so you're not going to get 140 or 110 or 100 pounds of compression, because we're not cycling the intake and the exhaust valve. But if all of a sudden you can put your finger over it and get your wife to just tap the starter a couple of times and it's blowing your finger clean off the hole, then maybe you've got a broken valve spring or something. But there's a lot of you've got some diagnostic things to go through here before you can actually determine what's going to be wrong with it. I wouldn't be yanking the head off that thing. I'd be running all my tests with the head on it. So, I mean, why don't you just back off each one of the adjustment nuts on the rocker assembly and count until you get slop, and then put a half a turn or a turn after slop on both of them, then put the valve cover back on, then start it up, and then listen to it. And if you got a little clatter, then a little bit more, and let's adjust the valves first. Another thing is, a lot of times we'll put air into the cylinder because we have a broken valve spring, and so we don't have to take the head off to replace the spring. We just air up the cylinder, pull the keeper off, compress the valve, pull the keeper off, replace the spring, put it all back together. So I think you got a lot of more work to do in the diagnostic part long before you pull the head off that Crown Vic.
Okay.
So I am 95% confident that you're going to find the problem the way I described it by taking the rockers off and hitting the valve. And another thing, start it up with the rocker off of it and put your fingers on both of those rocker assemblies, and let's make sure we don't have a flat lobe on the camshaft, because one of the rockers will move and the other rocker will barely move. And then you go, oh, well, wait a minute, maybe I've got a worn lobe on the camshaft. And that's where my malfunction is. So just watch that and go from there. And then call me and tell me what you find. So that way I'll know if my guess was as good as anybody else's. Anyway, thanks, Nick. Thank you very much. Car repair is really just a step-by-step process. We talked to Dennis not too long ago, and he was talking about his battery was dead. That's what happens in my world, is the battery's dead, and all of a sudden we're jumping to the very worst possible scenario, that the computer in the car is stuck and it's drawing amperage and causing the battery to die, and as a result of that, then I need to replace the computer that's behind the glove box, and the kid at the auto parts store who was born day before yesterday and has no whiskers told me that I needed to have it reprogrammed, and if I did, I should use an 87 program for my 85. All of that is horse manure. All of that. There's a process. What would it be like if you went to the doctor and you said, I'm having a tough time with my right ear. Intermittently, I don't hear very well out of it. And then intermittently, I hear really great. But then I have this buzzing noise in there sometimes. What would you think if he went over to the computer and he popped up Google and he wrote, buzzing in the ears? What would you do? What would you think? There is a process in car repair. I want to tell you that there's a lot of shops in Phoenix, in the surrounding area. I'm talking from Prescott to Casa Grande, from the way West Valley to Apache Junction. There's lots of great shops. Here's how you find one in your geographical area. Go to the local parts department and talk to the gray-haired guy on the counter and look him in the eye and say, you been here a while? Yeah, I've been here 11 years. Do you know who pays their bills and who doesn't? Yep. Who brings parts back? Otherwise, they order a brand new computer and then they bring it back and tell you that it's bad. Yeah, there's a few of them to do that. How about the guy that always buys a computer and never returns it, indicating that more than likely, he's doing what you're supposed to do. Yeah, that's John. You know what I mean? So those are the kinds of conversations you should have. We got a caller. Who might that be?
That would be Terry.
Terry, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Speaking of batteries, back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, we were always told to disconnect the battery from the vehicle ignition before you put a charger on it. And I've been doing that ever since then. Except nowadays, of course, with the computers and all on them, if you pull the power away from the computer, guess what? You're starting all over again on your drive cycle. So
yeah.
I have two questions. First of all, is there any place written down, or is there any way to? Is it okay to hook a battery charger or a trickle charger up to a battery that's still connected to the ignition system? And B is, if you have to change out the battery, is there a way to keep the power on the computer so you don't have to go through the dry cycle routine again?
Well, you've got a lot on my plate, and I don't have a whole lot of time. A dry cycle is a particular set of circumstances that you have to go through to completely wipe away any memory of problems, and that has to do with your emission testing, a drive cycle.
Right, but if I disconnect the battery, all that, I have to start again when I reconnect the battery.
Yeah, so what?
Because it takes the battery power away.
So what? So what? Are you going? Is this an emission question or not?
No.
Okay.
It's a battery.
All right.
Question.
Then let me answer your question. Forget the emissions. Who cares? You're going to put a drive cycle on it. Who cares? I disconnect the battery every once in a while just to give my computer a fresh look at life. It's no big deal. The answer to your question is there isn't a car out there I know of that you can't hook a trickle charger up or something that's capable of 10 to 30 amps to the battery system, to the electrical system. There isn't anything out there. When you start the conversation, you're talking about 40s and 60s. We're talking 50 plus years ago. Today is so much more sophisticated. But the answer to your question is real simple. You can put anything that's been made in the 20th century, from 2000 all the way north of that, you can hook any battery charger you want. Now, a commercial battery charger that would be able of 80 amps is not a good idea, but normally you wouldn't have that in your garage. You've got something that's going to be capable of 10 amps or less. So, yes, any of that will be fine. Folks, what he's talking about the drive cycle is it's erasing the computer's memory. historical data. It's driving how much fuel and under what circumstances and what timing and what was the temperature of the air and how much braking was he doing and all this other stuff. Every once in a while you pull a battery out of a car, you change it, you just erased all the historical data. The computer will rebuild that historical data in a period of 4 or 5 days. And you'll never know the difference. The only thing you'll have to do is you'll have to redo this clock in your car. Sometimes you can put a 9-volt battery adapter in the cigarette lighter to keep the memory while you pull the battery out. But I want to tell you, my shop, 20 bays deep, we got lots of people working on cars. There isn't one of us that has that 9-volt battery in our toolbox that we care about maintaining whatever historical parameters the engine fuel and timing chapters in the computer are keeping track of. It's no different than just shutting off your computer on your desktop. So don't confuse the 40s, 50s, and 60s with today's, because today we don't disconnect batteries to charge them. We just charge them where they live and make sure the cables are good and clean. Mark@marksalem.com is my email. Mark with a K at marksalem, like the cigarette.com. Mark@marksalem.com. If you give me your phone number, a lot of times I have questions and I don't really like to type. So give me your phone number, give me your problem, and I'll call you back. See you next week.